And I ask that you give me clarity of thought and a clear tongue. And I ask that you also empower your spirit in these words, that they might be helpful for each of us in terms of our lives. In Jesus' name, amen. We're going to talk about being sidetracked by your past and blindsided by your present tonight. And this is where we are. I want you to think about, as we get started with this, I want you to just think about your past, what has gone on in your life, and if there are places in your past that if that person were to show up in here, it might cause you disturbance in your life. Because I would say that most everybody here has a past. And there are things in our lives that affect us. And sometimes very badly they would affect us. And if that, I know that between Thanksgiving and Christmas, if you encounter people in your family who you've had bad blood with or whatever, some of that past can come up. And you can encounter your past and it can really cause you a lot of trouble. That's where we are in Jacob's life here. He is about to encounter his past, which is his brother Esau. And if we were to go back and look, I've got several scriptures there. They aren't listed here. But in chapter 28, verses 10 to 22, that's when Jacob had an encounter with God. And it's really what I call his conversion experience. It's where he began to realize, oh, there is a God, and he's got some dealings with me. And in that particular thing, he said, well, God, if you'll do this, I'll do that. And he basically was kind of negotiating with God. He says, if you'll do this stuff for me, I'll do this for you. And we looked at that. And then he, in chapter 31, which we finished a couple weeks ago, he told Jacob, he says, I want you to go back to that place where you had an encounter with me. Bethel is where it is. And so he's told him to do that. Now, what you have in the Old Testament, if you look at it, is you have a physical picture of a spiritual reality in a lot of times in terms of our lives. And he said, God had told him, I'll be with you until I bring you back here. And that was a 20-year period. And when they did that, then he said, I want you to come back there now. And that's when God spoke to him again in chapter 31. In chapter 32, when he's on his way back there, I'm going to read verses 1 and 2 of chapter 32. Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. Now, I talked about those angels. I said, I don't know if he was the only one that saw him, or whether everybody saw him, we don't know. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's army. So he called the name of that place Mahanaim. Mahanaim. Whatever you want to call it. Anyway, what he did was, he was coming back into covenant territory. This is where God wanted him to be in terms of his life. He was coming back into God's place. Now, once again, it's a physical picture of a spiritual reality. Every so often I encounter people who have been out there in the world, and they knew God early in their life, maybe just kind of superficially, but they come back after being on a hiatus. Now, that hiatus could be a day, could be a week, could be a month, could be a year, could be years. And they're coming back. He's coming back into covenant territory. And when he came back into covenant territory in the last 2 weeks, we've been looking at him when he wrestled with this man or God at the River Jabbok, when he was left alone. Anybody here ever been left alone to wrestle with the problems of your life or the things that are going on in terms of your circumstances and everything about your life? And anybody been up late at night and just kind of really wrestling with God in the silence of the night, and you can't sleep? It's as if God woke you up. Well, this is the way Jacob was, and he was wrestling with God, and there's a wrestling match that takes place. And that's what we have finished just a little bit ago, is this wrestling match. And he was wrestling with God but he was back in covenant territory in terms of this. He'd been on the road for 20 years, you might say, and he was being called back to this place by God. And when he was calling back, he's about to encounter his past, who is Esau, his brother, who he cheated out of his birthright and his inheritance, basically. And he's about to encounter his brother after 20 years. And that's where we kind of find ourselves. He's come back to encounter his past. Now, part of this is about being sidetracked by your past. And so I want to start there. Chapter 33, verses 1 to 3. And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and 400 men with him. Now, that would get my attention. Since he's had bad blood with his brother 20 years ago, here comes his brother with 400 guys. That would get my attention real quick. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two maids, and he put the maids with their children in front. Then Leah, her children, and Rachel and Joseph last of all. He himself went on before them, bowing himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. Now, you got to take these people out of stained glass, and you got to say, these are people like you and me, and they deal with the same kinds of stuff that you and I deal with. And I want you to notice the priority that Jacob had. Now, if you know anything about, I know I got some new people here, but he has 11 children by four women in this thing. Sorry. He has 11 children by four women. He got tricked into marrying Leah. Then he got to marry the sister that he really wanted, and he really loves Rachel. And then they have two handmaids, and it's all about the fertility thing. And next thing you know, he's got four women in the household, and he ends up with 11 children. And those 11 children, in the first 5 or 6 years, he's got 11 kids in high chairs, and nobody's past first grade. Oh, my God. That's where I say, I'm going to work. I don't know about you, but that's where I would be. Anyway, that's what he has. Well, this is 20 years later to this time, and these kids are growing up in here, but I want you to notice the priority. He is a man who, he is God's man. God got a hold of him at Bethel. That's when things changed for him. Up to that time, he had real no interest in God. He was not really plugged into God. He grew up in a good household, but that household also had its issues too, and we went through some of that. But when he was at Bethel, God got a hold of him and talked to him. I call it his conversion experience, because at that point in time, Jacob sort of changed. Now, he still was a man who wrestled with the things of this world, and we wrestle with things in this world all the time. But when he's coming back here, his past is about to enter into his life. And some of us have those kind of places in our past, don't we? That, oh, I don't really want to encounter this at all. So what he does, his brother's coming. I want you to notice the priority, because this is important in terms of him. He's just a human being, just like you and me. And he lives by the, partially in this world all the time. He's not just, you know, walking around with a Bible in his hand. He takes those, he divided the children among Rachel and Leah and the two maids. The two maids have, I don't know how many kids, who has how many kids. I know that Rachel has one kid. Leah has about 5 or 6 of them. And the two handmaidens have about 4 kids, 2 kids each. Anyway, it adds up to 11. Now, notice the order here. He divided them all up, probably by their parents or their mothers. He put the maids with their children in front. So this is the priority thing. He says, as far as I'm concerned, and he's not saying this, but let me tell you what. These people are not idiots. they can tell the difference who's being favored and who isn't. He says, I'm going to put the two maids up front with their kids because they're not as important as Leah and her kids right here. And I'm going to make Rachel be at the end of the line here with Joseph. Now, I want you to think about these 11 kids. These 11 kids got some age on them now. This is 20 years into it, so some of them are 12, 13 years old and stuff like that. And you've got Dad obviously showing favor. What does this do in terms of the workings of that household? There are people like you and me, so there are, I guarantee you, there are webs of intrigue that are taking place in the context of those four women and all those kids because Jacob has his favorite, and that's Rachel because that's the one he was really in love with and he wanted to marry initially. So you're going to be dealing with people with jealousy and envy, enmity, rivalry. All these things are tied into this, and this is an encounter with the past here where they saw coming to him, and he's having to deal with this. Now, I want you to think about this because I know this. Families have what I call palace politics. Workplaces have what I call palace politics. Churches have what I call palace politics. And that's where things are, who's he checking in with? And the brothers and sisters fight. Well, Dad always liked my sister better than me. And you just think about all the politics that is going on in the context of these four women and 11 children and at this time. And this is a crisis situation for Jacob and the family at this point because he's coming in contact with his past, which is his brother Esau, who, when he left, was out to kill him. Okay? Now, you got to keep all this thing. So you got to deal with the politics all in this family. And let me tell you something. We all live in this kind of world. Some of our families are better than others in terms of how things worked out, in terms of things. But I guarantee you, with this many people sitting here, some of you have real issues in the context of your families. And if you don't have issues there, you might have issues in your workplace. And if you don't have that, you might have issues in the church. Oh, my God. It's always there. Because, you know what? We're no good. That's why Jesus died. Keep it in mind. And that includes you and me as well. So this is what's going on here. So you need to understand this. And the other thing about this, we're talking about discovering God's will in this whole Bible study. And discovering God's will for your life. One of the things we need to remember about Jacob is he is the person who is in charge of redemption of his family, but not only his family, the redemption of the world is going to come down through that line. And I'm going to say something to this to some of you. If you are God's man or woman in this world right now, you might be the pathway of redemption for somebody in your family or somebody in your workplace or maybe one of your friends down the line, and you don't even know it yet. Because as Jacob is doing this and he set all these things up, the redemption of the world is resting here, is his youngest son here, whose name is Joseph. And his story comes down the line in chapter 38 through 50, how he redeemed, really, the world of Egypt out of their famine and everything, and then saved God's people, which is the pathway of redemption for us. So you need to keep all this in mind. Is even as all this palace politics, all this humanity is taking place, and all the things that we deal with in this life, in terms of our place, that God has a purpose in this as well. And he has a purpose in your life as well. And we're looking at this, what I'm describing to you is the horizontal part of life. You know, we all live with it. But the vertical part of that is God's purpose in the midst of this thing. And so the order here makes a difference because he's just human. Verses 4 to 7. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him and they wept. Now, we got 20 years here, and between Esau trying to kill him and Jacob running for the hills, they come back. This always reminds me of what happens like at an airport or somebody comes to visit from the family. Oh, it's so good to see you. Oh, so good to see you. And then a week later they leave. Oh, it's so bad. I'm so glad to have you here. But it's the week that's in between that you got to think about. Because sometimes you might, you just want to, you say things that you would probably don't really mean. And they do too. And sometimes, we don't sit well together anyway. And so there's family stuff going on. But this is what, in verse 4, when Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him and they wept. And I think of, God, it's what people do in the airports when they meet, if somebody gets off the plane. And then, verse 5, and when Esau raised his eyes and saw the women and children, he said, who are these with you? Now, there's a couple things here. One, remember, Jacob has never gone home for the holidays for 20 years because that wasn't going to work for him because Esau would probably kill him. So he hadn't gone home for the holidays, and it's been 20 years. So he says, so Esau said, who are these with you? And Jacob said, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. Then the maids drew near, and they and their children. Notice the priority again. The two handmaids come with their kids first. They drew near, they and their children, and bowed down. Then, verse 7, Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. Priority. And last, Joseph and Rachel drew near, and they bowed down. And you need to pick up on the order here. Because if you're just reading the Bible, you don't think about this. You don't think about the priorities of the people in the family. You don't think about the order of things. And the fact that even though we're reading Bible stories and it's supposed to be all spiritual and everything, these are real people here. And he put the front ones in front that were he felt the least about. Verse 8, and Esau said, what do you mean by all this company which I met? And Jacob answered, to find favor in the sight of my Lord. And what is all this? And, as I said, they don't come home for the holidays. So this is the first time that they've met in terms of this. And if you look back in chapter 32, verses 13 to 21, he found out that what he did was he sent gifts to Esau, and he sent them in three different groupings of gifts. Some of us can figure this out. If you have Christmas and you get one big gift, that's not nearly as much fun as if you get three gifts. Is it? I've watched kids too. If they only get one gift, I got another one. Anyway, this is what he did for Esau. And why does he do this? Because Jacob is no idiot. He is smart. He understands his brother. And he had sent three droves of sheep and stuff. One, and then he is striving with the world is what he's doing. He's working the angles as best as he knows how. He may be God's man in this world, but he's been playing this game with God. What if, and he still strives with the world around him. And he does that. And in verse 20 of chapter 32, it says this. If I can find it. Where are you, 20? And you and your servant, moreover, your servant Jacob is behind us, for he thought, I may appease him with the present that goes before me. And so what he's doing, he says, I need to take care of this because my brother may still have that bad blood really in his throat, and he's ready to kill me. And he says, and afterwards I shall see his face. Perhaps he will accept me. So he's not forgetting what has happened over the 20 years. And there's another thing that I know for sure. It doesn't talk about Esau in here, but he hasn't forgotten either. He hasn't forgotten that he stole his birthright, and he stole his heritage, and all that his mother had done with Jacob in terms of conniving to do that stuff. And so Jacob's not an idiot. He may be God's man, and he may be the pathway of redemption, but he is working the angles as best he knows how. Verse 9, but Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. What he said, oh, I don't need all these gifts. You don't need to give that stuff to me, Jacob. But you just know this. Jacob is a man of the world, and he is God's man, but he knows his brother, and he also knows human nature. So he strives with things. And what you have here is a physical picture, but there's a spiritual reality behind this. And I know this about all of our lives. We all struggle with the things of this life. Do we not? I won't ask for hands. We do. We struggle with stuff. We strive with the world around us. We also suffer from the same kinds of human issues that everybody else does. And that has to do with the enmity and the rivalry. And sometimes we have jealousy and envy. And all these things work together in us. And Jacob knows this. And Esau says, oh, I don't need all that. And that's fine and dandy. Verses 10 to 12. Jacob said, no, I pray you, if I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from my hand. For truly to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Oh, yeah, really? Come on. Got bad blood between brothers and out here or sisters out here. It's like, oh, it's so good to see you. I feel like this is a God moment. Yeah, sure it is. Sure it is. And you're listening to what Jacob says. Oh, it's like seeing the face of God. With such favor have you received me. You know what this is, don't you? This is all BS. Bible study. Got it? I'm here to tell you now. You just need to read this stuff and understand what's going on here. Verse 11, accept, I pray you, my gift that is brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have enough. Thus he urged him, and notice what Esau does. He took it. He took the presents that Jacob gave to him. What we know about Jacob and and Esau is the same thing that Jacob knew about Esau. Is that Esau lives by the world and the flesh. He doesn't have any regard for God, so to speak, at all in terms of this. And Jacob understands Esau. And that's why he said, oh, keep the stuff. And, of course, Esau finally does. And that's how this works. Now, Jacob, you need to... Think horizontal. The horizontal picture is there. We could put this on TV as a soap opera if you wanted to, and you'd get the very, very human part of this thing and put it on horizontally. But you also need to think vertically here. Because even though Jacob is doing all these things that are really, you know, he's just working the angles as best he can, Jacob is a man of God, and we know that from his first encounter at Bethel where he kind of made deals with God. And then recently he had this wrestling match with God at the River Jabbok. He's a man of God. He also has God's favor. We know that because he is the picture of redemption for humanity. He's the pathway. So he has favor with God. How come he's got that favor? Well, God chose him. It's kind of like if you are a man or a woman who knows Jesus as your Savior, guess what? You were chosen. You may have made the response of faith and said, yeah, I accept it, but you were chosen. Same way that Jacob was chosen, and you might be that pathway of redemption for somebody else. But Jacob is very human, and so are you, and so am I. And Jacob doesn't trust Esau at all because he knows Esau, and he lives by the flesh. Now, what we know is that when Jacob wrestled with God at that river, that wrestling match was never really an issue with God. Because when the morning came, all he did was touch Jacob's hip and put it out of joint. And basically, at that point in time, Jacob was a man who walked with a limp the rest of his life. He never walked with that same cocksure attitude. He walked with a limp. So Jacob is the one who may have changed in all this, not Esau. And one of the things that we do in this world is, if you're God's man or woman in this world, and you may have family members, or you may have people you work with, or you may have things, if God's got his hand on your life, and you have had that wrestling match where God basically says, you know what, if you're my man, then by God, you're going to have to act like it. And he says, because I'm going to work through you. If you're my woman in this world, then here's the deal. You're going to have to be my woman in the world. And if you don't get it, then I'm going to deal with you. And that's basically where Jacob is at this point. Esau, on the other hand, he's just a person in the world. He's related to him. Now, all you have to do is look around you if you're in that kind of sense. Because if God has chosen you, he's not going to let you live your life on your terms. Period. He'll hurt you if he has to. The same way he put his joint out in Jacob. Verses 12 to 14, then Esau said, let us journey on our way, and I will go before you. But Jacob said to him, my Lord knows that the children are frail, and that the flocks are and herds giving suck are a care to me. If they are overdriven for one day, all the flocks will die. Let my Lord pass on before his servant, and I will lead on slowly, according to the pace of the cattle which are before me, and according to the pace of the children, until I come to my Lord in Seir. Now, Jacob isn't telling the truth here. The real reason he doesn't want to go with Esau is he doesn't trust Esau. He knows that I may have changed and God may have talked to me, but I don't think he's talked to Esau. And this is when your past, you got to get sidetracked by your past. Something in your past that gets in your way as you may be going towards God. But you get sidetracked because, ooh, it's an obstacle or it's a threatening spot in terms of your life, or it can cause you a lot of pain, and you just don't want to go that way. And so Jacob is saying, I tell you what, you know, the kids are slow, and, you know, I got flocks here, and I think you just go on your way, and I'll follow along. That's what he's doing. Verses 15 to 17. So Esau said, let me leave with you some of the men who are with me. Uh-huh. How many? It came with 400. He said, If I'm Jacob, I'm thinking, wait a minute. I don't want his men around my people. I don't want him around at all. So Esau said, let me leave with you some of the men who are with me. But he said, what need is there let me find favor in the sight of my Lord. So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. But Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built himself a house and made booths for his cattle. And therefore the name of the place is called Succoth. Now, this is where you get sidetracked. Jacob gets sidetracked here. Where did God tell him to go to when he was getting 20 years out and he was getting ready to leave Laban? He said, you go back to Bethel. Jacob is on his way there. He meets his brother, and that kind of sidetracks him a little bit. And his brother, he says, I'm not going to go with him. And so what he does, this is the place where he really gets sidetracked. He ends up going to Succoth, where he builds a house. Something from his past got in his way and get him off the path of where he's supposed to go, because he's supposed to go to Bethel. Now, physically, he's only 20 miles away from Bethel. He's kind of from here to Blue Mound. He's close, but he's not where God told him to be. And you know what? I encounter people who are, God gets a hold of them. It says, you need to be my man. And he gives you a place. Now, that place can, this is a physical picture here, but it could be a spiritual truth in terms of where you need to be as a person. And you get started in that pathway, but something that's come out of your past gets into your way and either sidetracks you because, well, I just don't want to deal with it. Or it scares you, and I'm not dealing with that. And you go off away, and you get off the path that God wants you to be on. And this is a physical picture in the Old Testament of that exact kind of thing happened. God had told Jacob to go to Bethel, the place where he encountered God in the first place, because that's covenant territory. And what does Jacob do? He's headed there, but then he runs into his brother, and his brother gets him moving in a different direction, and he goes to a place and that is called Succoth, that he gives that name to a place of that, and he builds a house there, which is about 20 miles away from Bethel. It's not that far physically, but I tell you what, you can get someplace, and you can be close, but you're not there. In terms of your spiritual life as well. And it says that he journeyed there and he built himself a house and made booths for his cattle, and therefore the name of the place is called Succoth. That's what he did right there. Okay? Verses 18 to 20. And Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which was close to this place where he built his house, which is in the land of Canaan, on his way from Paddan Aram. And he camped before the city, and from the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, he bought for 100 pieces of money the piece of land on which he had pitched his tent. Therefore, he erected an altar and called it El Elohe Israel, which means that is God, the God of Israel. Now, he's had his name changed by God earlier, but he has not always adopted it. And there's this that's going on in here as well. Now, he builds an altar in this place. We looked at the altar building of Abraham and Isaac, and this is the first time that, well, actually it's the second time, because at Bethel, Jacob had built a monument to God where he had met God for the first time. But he comes here and he builds an altar. And I talked about altar builders before. One of the things that Abraham always did was wherever he went, he would build an altar. And he said, basically, he dedicated the place to God in his life. Now, we're kind of called to follow that kind of program. You build an altar. You build some kind. You dedicate the place to God. Now, this can be your house. This can be your workplace. This can be wherever you're settled in terms of your life. But it's an altar place. It says, okay, This is where I'm camping. This is where I'm building my altar. This is going to be dedicated to God. So what he does here is he does this here, but he's still about 20 miles from where he needs to be. Once again, that's a physical picture of sometimes the, what happens to us spiritually is we may be close to where we're supposed to be, but we're not there because we get sidetracked by something else and it puts us into a different place, close maybe, but not there. Now, he bought the land and he pitched his tent. And whenever I read he camped before the city, he pitches his tent. You can pitch your tent. That's kind of like pitching the direction of your house. When Lot went down to Sodom and Gomorrah, he pitched his tent toward the cities. It's almost like, I want to be able to see the kind of life I want. And so Jacob is kind of pitching his tent, his direction of his life, towards this place called Shechem, instead of going to where God told him to go, which is in Bethel. And so you need to understand that sometimes what we do is we get sidetracked by the things that happen in our past that come up and kind of stand in front of us, but then here we are. Well, I just might as well pitch my tent this way. And that's what we do with our lives. And what you have here is a picture of that. Even though he built it and dedicated it to God, he is not where he should be. And he built the altar there, and the place was called God, the God of Israel. And in the wrestling match, God had already changed his name from Jacob to Israel. He basically recognized the name change, even though he's still going by his old life, his old name. Chapter 34, he's been sidetracked. Get this. And I've seen a lot of people get sidetracked in their lives. You know, they get moving towards God, where God wants them to be in terms of their lives. And something gets in their way from their past, basically. Something rears its ugly head and gets us to move the wrong off to the edges. And that's where he is. He's off road now. He's not where he needs to be. Verses 34 to 1 to 7. Now, this is where someone's in the kitchen with Dinah. Basically, this is where the song came from. Now, Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had born to Jacob, went out to visit the women of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, the prince of the land, saw her, he seized her and lay with her and humbled her. And his soul was drawn to Dinah, the daughter of Jacob. He loved the maiden and spoke tenderly to her. So Shechem spoke to his father Hamor, saying, "Get me this maiden for my wife." Now Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with his cattle in the field, so Jacob held his peace until they came. And Hamor, the father of Shechem, went out to Jacob to speak with him. The sons of Jacob came in from the field when they heard of it, and the men were indignant and very angry because he had wrought folly in Israel by lying with Jacob's daughter, for such a thing ought not to be done. Now, sidetracked. He's sidetracked. Jacob is sidetracked. He's not where he's supposed to be. So, how parent, this is a pretty good picture of how parents can cause their kids to get into trouble. Dinah is exposed to a situation here. She's probably 16, 17 years old, that kind of thing. And she's either raped or it was a date rape of some kind. But it wasn't voluntary in terms of this. Jacob should be in Bethel. 20 miles away. He's not far, but he's far enough away. And he had pitched his tent towards this city, Shechem. And what I see here is a picture of what I see. Parents are not where they should be in terms of their spiritual life. This is a spiritual picture. This is where parents are not where they should be in terms of their spiritual life. And they can kind of pitch their tent, their life direction towards the world. They can have one foot sort of in the kingdom and one foot in the world around them, but they're looking towards the world. And they're not parents who are responding very well to God's dealing with them. If you think about this, if Jacob had gone to Bethel, where he was supposed to go in the first place, this might not have happened. So I look at this, I says, okay, this is a physical picture of another spiritual reality, because I know I take tours in people's lives. I've lived my own, for that matter. This whole thing about the rape here might have been spared, but what we're going to read on murder might have been spared too if they were where God had told them to go and instructed them in terms of how they were supposed to live their lives in the first place. And this is the parents. These are the two handmaids, and Leah and Rachel and Jacob, who is the head of the household, who is the one in charge of direction in the first place. And if they had gone where he had been instructed to go, this might not have happened. Now, what we see here in the story is a physical picture. We see the geographic move. But in that particular thing, is he was told to go to Bethel, but you see a very much a geographic move, but it is a spiritual picture of not where you should be. It's that simple. And, you know, she's a woman, about probably 16, 17 years old, maybe not even quite that old for that. And she gets into all kinds of trouble in this particular setting. I had a gal, this must be 35 years ago now, came to see me for counseling. Actually, she came to get me to counsel her 16-year-old daughter. And since this 16-year-old daughter was giving her all kinds of trouble and stuff, and she wanted me to straighten her out. And I started asking, I didn't know her. Sometimes I got counseling from off the street, so to speak. But I kind of found she was recommended to me by somebody who was a member of the church anyway. Come to find out, after talking to her for a while, she had been living over the past 10 years with two or three different men. And she was raising her daughter in the context of those relationships with these two or three men. And what had happened was that the travesty of what she had been doing with her own life was being transferred down, and her daughter was a symptom of her seeds that she'd been planting. And what I want you to see here is that what may have happened here may have been the seeds of what Jacob didn't do when he was supposed to. And so there was a travesty. I told this gal, she didn't like to hear what I told her. I says, you know, I said, the problem may be you. I said, you've been living this kind of life with your daughter in the household, and how is she going to be one who would respect you in terms of your life and everything? And I told her, I said, as far as I'm concerned, your daughter is a symptom of your own seeds, what you've been planting for a lot of years. She didn't like to hear that, but that's the truth. And she wasn't a member of the church, so didn't have to be nice to her. But I just told her the truth. You know, sometimes we need to hear the truth, and we may not like it. But, you know, parents, hey, sometimes we have the fruit of our own failure that come with us. Because I want you to know something about this stuff. You know, I've got to say, as goes the leadership, so go the people. Well, parents, guess what? Wherever you go, the kids go with you. So, Jacob, why did you go to Succoth instead of Bethel like God told you to? Well, I didn't want to mess with my brother. I just didn't want to deal with my past. That's why I didn't. So I went to sin. But as goes the leadership, so go the people. As go the parents, so go the kids. And so you can let this scripture speak to you, or you could also use it as in terms of just observation. But when you start reading the Bible as autobiography, that's when it gets really real to you. It's a physical picture of a spiritual truth. And out of this, there's a crisis that is about to occur because Jacob went 20 miles away from where he was supposed to be, and God is going to get a hold of him and say, you need to get your head on straight and your heart right, Jacob. Now, when I read this stuff, I try to put it in modern pictures. Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had born to Jacob, went out to visit the women of the land. You know what I think of? This is cruising down El Dorado in the canyon. I grew up here, so I understand this. You know, cruising down El Dorado Indicator. When I was in high school, man, that's what it is. We're cruising down El Dorado Indicator, and there's so many ways that you can get into circumstances. And these girls are all in their car together, you know. They're just cruising down El Dorado. And the reason is because Jacob's not where he should be in terms of his life. And so we pass on responsibility for the next generation. And the problem with kids may be really related to who we are rather than where the kids are. So anyway, she's doing this. And then in the midst of that, there's this encounter with Shechem. By the way, you notice that it says the son of Hamor the Hivite, the prince of the land. This was the first family of that community. And I've dealt with this before, too, in smaller communities. You know, there's one first family that they've been there for 1,000 years, or they have money or whatever, but they kind of run the community. I've run into churches like this where one or two families will run the church, and you better not mess with those families because, this is one of those first families of the community kind of thing that we're dealing with here. And he hooks up with this gal, and he forces himself upon her. And so you have this going on. And then in verse 5, it says, now Jacob heard that he had defiled his daughter Dinah, but his sons were with the cattle, so Jacob held his peace. Well, you know, he's moved into this community, and you've got a family here that family runs the community. So you got to be careful what you do. And so he holds his peace in terms of that. In reality, I'm thinking this. Jacob doesn't know what to do. In a galaxy far, far away, when I was growing up here in Decatur, I got in trouble one night, and it wasn't my fault, but I got in trouble one night, and my dad didn't know what to do. So he called one of our neighbors, a guy that he knows, said, what do I do in this situation? And he told him, and I didn't like what he told him, but I was innocent, so to speak. Either that or I was framed. Anyway, but I kind of think about this in terms of Jacob. I says, I'm not sure he knew what to do in this situation anyway. You got to kind of hold your tongue. I mean, he understands the politics of the city, and his daughter has been raped by the son of the guy who runs the city, so to speak. And what do I do in terms of this? And I try to put this stuff into our world, where you're not just reading it from a churchiana kind of thinking here. And then what happens is the boys come home. And when the boys come home, they're hacked off, man. This guy's messing with our sister. And so they get good and mad. And, of course, they're mostly grown boys. And they're young and, you know, anywhere from 16 to 20. Get that kind of age group right there. And they're hot. And they come down there and it says, let's kill this sucker. That's what they're thinking in terms of this stuff. Now, you got to remember this. This is just like humanity. This is just like a lot of stories we read about in our papers, or maybe we live some of this stuff. But you got to think about this. In my life, if I'm God's man, then I need to always keep in mind that maybe the redemption of other people, I'm the pathway to their redemption. And so I can't just think about it from a horizontal standpoint or just a physical human standpoint. I got to think about this stuff from a vertical standpoint as well, which is, if I'm God's man in this world, how am I supposed to handle this stuff? How am I supposed to live through this stuff? Because you're driving in traffic, essentially, all the time. Verses 8 to 10 or 11. But Hamor spoke with them, saying, the soul of my son Shechem longs for your daughter. I pray you give her to him in marriage. Make marriage with us. Give your daughters to us and take our daughters for yourselves. And you shall dwell with us. The land shall be open to you and dwell and trade in it and get property in it. And Shechem also said to her father, that's Jacob, and to her brothers, let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me I will give. Ask of me whatever so much as marriage present and gift. And I will give according as you say to me, only give me the maiden to be my wife. Now, as I said, we got sidetracked by our past, but he is being blindsided now by his present. The life situations sometimes that we get ourselves into become as big an issue as the past was. And those things that we're running into in terms of our lives can get really blindside us. It's like we get hit from the side or something. And that's what's going on here now. It's just no longer about Esau and the things that happened in Jacob's past. This is now about the present and where they're living right now because they missed where they were supposed to be. And Jacob's dealing with this, and he may not know what to do with all this stuff because God hadn't talked to him, and I don't hear him asking God either, by the way. And peer pressure and all that that comes into play. Keep the vertical and the horizontal in your eyesight. You know, God's involved. God's purpose in human lives. Now, what are these people doing with them? It says, these people of Shechem and the first family of Shechem. We want you to become part of our community. We want you to think like us. We want world thinking to be in your thing. You don't need to be God's people. They don't come out and say this, but that's exactly what they're implying here. We need you to become like us. And does not the world say that to us regularly? You need to become like us. You need to think like us as well. In verses 11 and 12, that's what's going on here. Shechem also said to her father and to her brothers, let me find favor in your eyes, and whatever you say to me, I will give. In other words, the world will give things to us in terms of our lives. Now, verse 12, ask of me ever so much as marriage, present, and gift, and I will give according to you. In other words, the world will give things to us in order to get us to think like the world. Only give me your daughter, Jacob. And what does the world do to us? It says, give me your children. That's what the world says to us. give me your kids. And to the brothers, give me your sister. Sometimes it's give me your brother. The world is saying, we want your brother. We want your sister in terms of this thing. And one of the things that I need to say to God's people is remember who you are as God's people. Remember who you are, because this world will blindside us and will try to take us out and take us and put us someplace else. How much time am I? Well, I got a couple more minutes. Of course, we're going to say Jacob is the man of God. Got it? He's the one that God has been talking to. None of the kids. Got it? God has no grandchildren, by the way. He only has children. And these kids may have grown up in a good, solid Christian home, you might say, with Jacob, even though he's human and he does some favor things that are not smart at all, and order and priorities in terms of his life. And things are not really perfect with him, but he's the one that God has been talking to. And even though those boys are part of that redemption history, God has not talked to them. Verse 13, the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and his father Hamor deceitfully. Oh, I love this. Because he has defiled their sister Dinah. They're out to get them. They said to them, we cannot do this thing to give our sister to one who is uncircumcised, for that would be a disgrace to us. Only on this condition will we consent to you that you will become as we are, and every male of you be circumcised. I'll back up on this. Hang on, guys. Then we'll give our daughters to you, and we will take your daughters to ourselves, and we will dwell with you and become one people. But if you will not listen to us and be circumcised, then we will take our daughter and we will be gone. Okay. The boys are doing this, okay? Not Jacob. You got to be circumcised like this. Now, what are they doing here? They're using their religion. You have to be baptized into the faith or else. If we were to translate this into this, in some denominational groups, some churches, you have to do this in order to be like us. Am I talking to anybody out here? You have to be baptized in this church. I don't care if you've been baptized someplace else. It doesn't count. You've got to be baptized here like us. And that's what these boys are using. They're using their religion to deceive. And Jacob is being blindsided by the present. He gets caught in a situation because he's off track, basically. And his life is like that. And now his boys are using this, his faith or his church or whatever you want to call it, to trick the people of the city. He says, you need to come to church with us, otherwise we won't give you our daughter, because it just doesn't work that way. You need to be Christianized or whatever. Okay? Now, I don't know if you can see this, but that's exactly what they're doing. And I know this about some Christians. They do this stuff. They deceive people in order to capture them. And I'm not lying here. It happens all the time. And that's what the boys, they're using religion here. You got to see that. They're using their religion to deceive. Okay, and I'm going to leave it with that. We'll do the vigilante stuff next week. But I'm here to tell you, everything's changed, but nothing's different, and everything's different, but nothing's changed. So let's pray. Lord, I ask.